Hey, it's Emily, your favorite PodRocket producer. Did you know that LogRocket has a TikTok now? You can catch up on all the interview clips from this show, watch UX tutorials, and get more great content from LogRocket. You can check out the LogRocket TikTok today at log.rocket. See you on TikTok.
Hi, and welcome to PodRocket, a web development podcast brought to you by LogRocket. LogRocket provides AI-first session replay and analytics, which surface the UX and technical issues impacting user experiences. Start understanding where your users are struggling by trying it for free at logrocket.com. I'm Josh, and today we have Evan Yu, creator of Vue and Veet, here to talk about Void Zero. Evan, would you like to introduce yourself real quick?
Hi, my name is Evan Yu, and I'm based in Singapore, and I have been an independent open source developer since 2016, and last year started a company called Void Zero. Before Void Zero, I was mostly working on open source projects like Vue and Veet. Last year, I started getting into the startup world and founded a company, and now I'm here to talk about it.
That's very exciting. Can you share the inspiration behind founding Void Zero?
I think the idea is largely being two parts. The one is, an open source developer, I've been working on the framework. And initially, I was only working for things that run in the browser. But as Node.js and the framework scene developed, I started to have to dig into the tooling layer for my own framework. And worked on that over the years. Eventually, at one point, I was like, there should be a simpler way of doing this, which led me to work on Veet. And as I was working on Veet, again, as I dig deeper and deeper into the stack, I just slowly came to the conclusion that there is a lot of unfortunate inefficiency in the JavaScript tooling, the status quo, that I think is a result of the natural evolution of the ecosystem without central guidance, which is good in a way because it allowed all the creativity and different ideas in the ecosystem just compete and have all kinds of different solutions. But I think as the ecosystem matures, it's at a point where people start to want stable and mature tools, and they want convergence to some extent so that they can focus on innovation in the areas that actually matters instead of dealing with a fragmentation and reinventing the wheels time from time. And I think there was a trend that I witnessed in the wide adoption of Veet, because initially when I created Veet, I meant it only for Vue, really. But halfway through, I realized it could actually support other frameworks, because a lot of things, you know, the frameworks are doing are starting to get more and more similar, especially at the tooling layer, right? And I think a lot of the other framework authors agreed, which is why quickly one after another, a lot of these meta frameworks started adopting Veet as their the base layer of their tooling, and a lot of the pure front-end frameworks started defaulting to Veet as the tooling that they recommend to their users. There is a level of convergence I myself have never witnessed before in the JavaScript ecosystem. And I think that's a good opportunity to capitalize on this momentum and maybe push a bit further and try to come up with something that could unify more layers beneath what Veet is currently sitting at. Right? But in order to do that, it does require a lot of effort from people who are fully dedicated to doing this on a full-time basis. So far, the projects I've been working on, like Vue and Veet, are all independent, and the funding model is not really enough to sustain, say, a team of fully dedicated engineers to work on it all the time, right? So a lot of our contributors in previous projects are either volunteers or part-time. So the company is really my attempt at making this a reality, because I decided it's time to try something different. But the end goal is always the same for me, because the whole reason I work on these open source projects is really I want to see more JavaScript and web developers succeed. And I think better tooling helps them do that. And that's always been the reason I work on frameworks and tools. And I think the starting point of Void Zero is no different. It's just we are aiming for something bigger, more ambitious, and also at the same time hoping to establish a sustainable business model that can support these tools and make sure they're here to stay, make sure they're free and open source for the long term.
That's a great problem statement and start of the solution statement. So continuing, what is exactly Void Zero?
So Void Zero is just the name of the company. Right now, we are focused on building a collection of open source projects. So if you go to the company website, you'll see that we list 4 projects currently. So there's Vite, Vitest, OXC, and Rodown. So the relationship between these projects and the company can be a bit intricate because we don't want to really say that Void Zero completely owns Vite, and especially Vitest, right? So Vitest is a kind of a spawn-off project that's very closely related to the Vite team, but the company employs multiple core team members of both Vite and Vitest. And of course, we have a lot of control over the direction of these projects, but we also want to make sure the governance of these two projects remain the team-based governance as before. So there are team members that are either employed by other companies or not sponsored, but not part of Void Zero, right? So their opinion and contribution is still important. Whereas on the lower layers, which are more sort of company-owned, company-driven, are OXC and Rodown, which are the Rust parts that we intend to use to support both Vite and Vitest down the road. So OXC is probably the lowest level toolchain that starts from a JavaScript parser that's written in Rust. And starting from the parser, there are also components like a linter, a formatter, a minifier, transformer that can transform TypeScript, JSX, target lowering, pretty much anything that you can think of when it comes to dealing with the JavaScript language processing. And on top of that, Rodown is the bundler that is built on top of OXC, leveraging all its parts, and will eventually support Vite and Vitest in the future.
This almost feels like a sort of vertical integration, where you've seen a lot of smaller companies taking over small parts of this space, but you have a unified vision, as you've described it, for the entire stack.
And I think the value of a unified stack is in that you will have one consistent AST, and you can do as much as possible in the same ecosystem and making sure they're all using the same consistent configuration, the same AST format, the same path resolution logic. I think one common example in the past is, for example, if you're using Webpack for your application bundling, but you're using Jest for your unit tests, you essentially have to configure both file transforms and path resolutions with two completely different systems and making sure they work the same. And there will be inconsistencies, right? And you have two different configurations that you have to just keep in sync every time you make a change to your build setup, which can be eliminated if the tools are just designed to work together.
Are there any other major problems or inefficiencies that you're excited about having the unified stack resolve?
Yeah, so performance is obviously a very big part of it. Just imagine in Vite today, if you're building a React app and you want better performance, you likely will be using the SWC-based React plugin. So in Vite itself, we also rely on ESBuild and Rollup at the same time. When you build a Vite application today with the SWC plugin, you're actually processing your code probably 4 times with different parsers. The first time you would pass through SWC for the transforms, then it's parsed, transformed, serialized back to string, and the data also goes between JavaScript and Rust and back to JavaScript. Then it's parsed through Rollup, which Rollup also uses SWC's parser, which is also a separate binary copy. So it gets sent to Rust again, parsed again in Rust, sent back to JavaScript again. And now it gets the AST gets processed by Rollup and bundled and then made into chunks of strings. All the while, you also have to do source maps for all these steps in between. And then finally, you have the source maps and the code generated, and we use ESBuild for the target lowering transforms and minification. Minification quality can be not as good as sometimes Terser or SWC Minify. So some users would opt to use a different minifier. So that's another pass of the final bundle gets parsed and minified again with a different AST. So you can see how much duplicated work we're doing here, just because each step we opt to use something different. And in Vite's case, there are unfortunate reasons why we have to use ESBuild and Rollup. I can go a bit into that if you want, but long story short, if we have the option to have one solution to do all these tasks with one AST without going back and forth between Rust, JavaScript, and serialize the ASTs all the time, we would do it. And that's exactly what we're trying to do with Rodown.
Let's say that you do succeed, that you've built a next-gen unified tooling stack with Rodown and so on. Mm-hmm. What does that look like for an end user writing an application with your tools?
So ideally, Rodown would sit at the library bundle level, whereas Vite sits at the application build tool level. So if you're building, Vite was designed to be working out of the box for most use cases, right? In a way, Vite is already providing the DX people love, but the internals were not as efficient as it could be. Then Rodown would also give people a lot of niceties. For example, if you're building a library, Rodown would be able to just spawn your TypeScript code base with close to zero configuration. In the future, it also comes with isolated declarations. You will be able to emit the DTS and DTS in the same pass as your TypeScript source code. Our hope is that there would be a very standard way for people to say, if I want to build a web application, I shouldn't have to think too much about setting up a build tool chain. Just by using Vite, I get most of the problems standardized and solved with best-in-class options. Similarly, if I want to bundle a library, Rodown should provide all of that. More importantly, I think these solutions should not be bundled to a specific runtime. Whether you are building with Dino, Bun, or Node.js, you should have the same options available to you in all those cases. We do want to have a consistent, unified developer experience for JavaScript developers. And I think more importantly, on top of Vite, what Vite provides today, there are other concerns in your development lifecycle, like linting, formatting, unit testing. I think these things would also benefit if they all use the same AST format and have the same path resolutions. Imagine they can understand the same configuration file if you want to alias things in your code base. Right? There's one central source of truth that just works across all these concerns. Instead of you having to teach each tool to understand how to understand your code base. I think we're still quite early, because in a way, a lot of the work we've done up to this point is catching up with what these individual set of tools are able to do all the way. But I think there are a lot of things, once we reach the feature completion phase, there are a lot of interesting things we can do on top of that.
Before we dive into the long term, how you compare with other efforts and the open source model you have, all of which I find fascinating, I want to talk a little bit about that note you made on supporting different environments, for example, Dino and Node, among others. You mentioned earlier that there are a lot of different ways of doing things in JavaScript now. There's the standard Node app, and then you have GitHub Actions and Expo and React Native and all these other different build targets and environments. And it seems like every single project out there has its own, you know, bespoke config to deal with its nuances. How do you balance being able to be a good experience out of the box with integrated what people want versus being able to also support the myriad of different outputs that every single project seems to differ on?
So that effort comes from a different angle, right? We can't just immediately wrap or change the way some of the established tools work. But I think by having our toolchain being composable individual components, we create a strong incentive for them to consider adopting our tools internally. Like, we actually have been in talks with multiple tools you've mentioned. I can't really name specifics right now, but there's strong interest in established projects in adopting OXC as the basis of their new AST handling, or adopting Rodown as a bundler for certain things. I think it's all possible if we end up shipping the best-in-class solution in every aspect, and also make them easily embeddable as components, as either Rust crates or NPM packages that's easily consumable, and people can build things on top of it, then there's a good opportunity for it to become the industry standard, where we can further remove those inconsistencies between these more monolithic systems. Right now, a lot of them are using incompatible underlying tools. Basically, what we want to see happen is what Vite is doing to the frameworks. A lot of frameworks previously were using different internal bundlers and configurations, but now they've converged on Vite. And that creates a lot of benefits, because there are a lot more interop. Users of these different frameworks can now share plugins, and they have a lot of mental overhead when they switch frameworks. Build tools are much similar, right? I think At one point, we do hope the Void Zero tool chain can have a similar effect on the Geometry ecosystem as a whole, where, for example, if, say, one day React Native apps can be built with Rodel, I think that would be really great. And there are also possibilities where JavaScript runtimes could leverage the tools we've built to enhance the development experience that they're trying to do, right? I think there's a good opportunity for this to happen, but that's built on the premise that we do deliver the best-in-class tools.
Sure. Let's talk about that a little bit then, how you're going to develop these tools. You have a very unusual model for a seed-founded startup, which is that you are primarily based on open source software, free open source. How do you balance that with the need to make money long-term?
This is the part people ask me quite a lot. I guess what we can tell people right now is we do have plans, and the line is going to be drawn pretty clear. Everything we build as open source will remain open source. We don't ever intend to do rug pulls where one day we change license and start charging you for the things you've been using. So the idea is there will be services, likely web services, that's associated with the toolchain that we've built. And the toolchain serves as a funnel for those services. Right now, I can't really get into too much details on what exact services we're going to build, but that is the general direction. And services will be a bit further down the road, right? Right now, we're focused on building the open source toolchain to make it so I think the monetization premise really depends on that. The toolchain that we built really becomes almost industry standard where it's widely adopted everywhere. The conversion and when it serves as a funnel in conversion to the services we're building, it will have a huge base amount of users that we can convert from.
Sure. Speaking about project governance, though, even if you don't change licenses or take over projects altogether, you still have a strong influence on these projects. For example, if Vite were to need a feature to support a Void Zero use case, it's likely that your company would be able to prioritize sending resources for that feature. So what, if any, steps do you think you'll be taking to ensure community governance stays with these projects, or at least doesn't get swamped by Void Zero or similar?
I think the governance largely also depends on who is actually funding the development, right? In a way, I think community governance in open source has always been, if you want more influence on the project, you need to be the one doing the work. That's always been the reality. In a lot of cases, just being vocal about what you want happen doesn't really create the kind of level of influence you'd hope it would have. And I think that's the reality for open source. Every project that's in practice, right? It's always the people actually shipping the code, doing the contributions, who have the largest influence on it. I think, in a way, what we can do is making sure that Void Zero, when we deliver the work, we do it in a balanced way that some features might be directly related to monetization efforts with Void Zero in the future, but the bottom line is we wouldn't do it in a way that would hurt the users who have been using the open source projects just for free. I think one important thing is we don't really want to do open core because that forces you to draw a line between what goes into the paywall and what does not. And I think the line is better drawn at code that runs on your machine is open source and free. But if the moment you want to use something that runs in the cloud or you want to have monitoring or insights or continued analysis, those kind of things will cost you money.
And you're going to be some of the, if not the best positioned people to write those analyses, to be able to understand how to, say, aggregate build logs or whatnot to gain those insights.
Yep.
A roll-down powered Vite alpha release, either very soon or as a release. Can you tell us a bit about that and why it's exciting?
Yeah. So it's actually already, there is a working progress branch and there are continuous releases that's set up. We are being able to use that version to actually run the starter SPA templates that you can scaffold with Create Vite. And we can even use it to run Power VitePress and build the documentation site of Vite itself. So in a lot of ways, it's quite usable, but one of the reasons we don't really consider it stable yet is because Rodel itself still needs a bit of work. I think the biggest chunk of work left as of now. So in a way, Rodel's 1.0 beta is synced with Rodel Vite's 1.0 alpha in a way, right? Because the stability of Rodel powered Vite relies on the stability of Rodel itself. Right now, the biggest chunk of work is really in the alignment between Rodel's edge case handling between between Rolldown and ES Build, and between Rolldown and Rollup. Because one of the goals when we decided to work on Rolldown is we want to unify the bundler that's used between development and production for better consistency. And I think the challenge in that is Rollup and ES Build do have quite a bit of behavior differences in some of the edge cases, right? So right now, we're enabling the test cases for both projects and run Rolldown against them. We're not aiming for 100% same outputs, but we essentially look at each test case and try to see what is the behavior it is trying to assert and whether it's really related to the correctness of it. Or is it just asserting a very specific behavior that this specific bundle decides to do? So we are essentially filtering both test suites down to the ones that are directly related to behavioral correctness and try to align with them as much as possible. So this ensures when we swap out ES Build and Rollup with Rolldown into Vite, existing applications will encounter as few edge cases as possible. So that's quite a big chunk of work that we're still focusing on right now.
It sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
I'm curious also, 5-10 years ago when a lot of the previous generation or its predecessors were being developed, you had an even larger swath of people writing weird and wacky code to support Internet Explorer 11, even IE 10 or older, or other now roughly unheard of environments. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the bundling, the roll down area, the building area is mm-hmm. getting easier to deal with over time now that we don't have to say support IE 10?
I think legacy browser support removes part of the need. For example, in the syntax lowering transforms, right now we're only aiming for down leveling to ES2015 because the need for down leveling to ES5 is quickly diminishing, right? So that's a good sign. But I think for bundlers, there are two aspects of it. The first is the need for bundling itself doesn't seem to diminish anytime soon. There will be some people claiming that you no longer need to bundle with HTTP, but in practice, that's just not the case if you really care about performance. I think there are things about nested network waterfalls and just the plain overhead of HTTP requests comes with all the cost of headers and just like the amount of headers and cookies that comes with each request can quickly overwhelm the browser. And one thing we've discovered with Vite is even on a local dev server, when you have several thousand modules, which is not uncommon in today's front-end scale of development, the browser just struggles to handle all the requests in parallel, and it just creates a bottleneck of your page loading performance. Bundling still is the most effective way to address that. And on the other hand, there's better compression when you bundle things together instead compared to individual models. I think the argument that you can just ship things unminified and uncompressed works only up to a certain scale, right? But not everyone's building medium to small size applications. There are definitely larger apps that also need to deal with performance. And I think you can't really constrain your application size just because of your technical choices. So the bundler really is a way for you to unlock that level of scale that you have to deal with. And another aspect of it is the module formats, right? So biggest source of complexity in bundling is probably the interop between ESM and CJS. And historically, there's also like AMD and all that. Luckily, few people use AMD nowadays, and it's more of a runtime construct now. Unfortunately, I think CJS is here to stay, at least for the next couple of years. The Node.js ecosystem is just so deeply entrenched in this sort of historical debt, unfortunately. Vite has been very strongly pushing towards pure ESM in a lot of ways. We're probably the first build tool to force users to write pure ESM for their own source code, right? We only allow ESM in user source code, and we only support CJS in dependencies. Unfortunately, in order to make things work, especially in the existing application that's been developed for a while, and they want to migrate to newer generations of tooling, right? It's easier said than done to just take your dependencies and migrate to modern ESM alternatives, right? I think it's a good effort. There are multiple people trying to do that. They're trying to publish modern ESM alternatives of these legacy CJS dependencies. But in reality, I think a lot of applications people are building kind of are stuck with old dependencies that are no longer being updated, and they don't really have the capacity to port or rewrite those dependencies themselves. And in a way, bundlers is still have to take on the responsibility of just handling that interop for them and making sure those dependencies can continue to be used. I think a good sign is that Node.js now has required ESM. So I think part of the reason why CJS is resistant to and just like sticks around in the ecosystem is because Node.js ESM transition has some design issues. For example, the required ESM decision, I think, could have been better addressed if from the first time Node.js supported ESM, it supported required ESM from the get-go. It would make the transition much, much easier. And for that reason, a lot of packages, for example, Vue, still have to ship CJS when it's expected to be consumed in Node.js, because if you ship both CJS and ESM, then it's very likely you'll result in a dual module hazard in some way. And sometimes even resulting in multiple copies of Vue, like one CJS copy and one ESM copy appearing in users' bundles without the user even being aware of it. Now that Node.js supports required ESM, I think it's finally allowing a lot of packages and modules to ship pure ESM and transition to pure ESM. Unfortunately, that also ties into the organization's Node.js version upgrade cadence, right? I think required ESM is backported to Node 22, but for all the organizations to upgrade to Node 22 as a bottom line, I think that will take at least 1 or 2 years. And then that's the moment when people will finally say, okay, I can move my package to pure ESM, and that'll take another few years. Up to until that period, I think the bundlers will still have to play the role to handle the interop.
The one level of packages you described, and then another couple of years of flexibility for the packages on top of them. So we're talking about a roughly 2030, give or take, era for many or most user land packages being ESM only or something like that. That's quite a long time from now.
We hope the work we're doing will help accelerate that process. If maybe in a way, for example, we have considered options like a strict mode switch where it would actually identify all the CJS dependencies in your tree and start recommending you to migrate away from them at some point.
There's a whole class of tools not yet mentioned on Void0.dev, code mods. Mm-hmm. That could integrate quite nicely with that. Have you or the company looked at also adding code mods or other things like that?
I think we do have the base components that's needed to build great code mod tools for JavaScript. In fact, we're actually pretty good friends with the author of AstGrep. I don't know if you heard of it. It's a great solution. And also, I think AstGrep plays a really nice row to fulfill the kind of like fast Rust-based mod tool. But it's also general purpose because it's using tree sitter. So it can parse multiple grammars and it's a bit more language agnostic. It can support multiple languages. But even just used for JavaScript, I think it's already pretty good. There might be room for collaboration with AstGrep in the future.
Okay, so we've talked about Rolldown and a little bit about Vue, but we haven't focused on Vue in a little bit. Are there any particular big next steps other than the Rolldown integration that you're excited about for the Vue?
Definitely.
Project?
So environment API is probably the biggest internal changes that we've had since Vue 2, I think. It's probably the biggest PR we've ever merged also. Multiple people have worked on it. It's a pretty complicated thing, but I guess the quick gist of it is previously one of the reasons a lot of meta frameworks migrated over to Vue is because Vue provided the capability to easily run your application in Node.js for server-side rendering with kind of hot module replacement for it. That initial implementation, so there was a previous API in Vue 5 called SSR, which essentially takes an entry point and converts it into something that can run in Node.js and applies SSR-specific transforms. We did that mostly because that was the only use case that we saw at that moment. But later on, we realized there are frameworks that's actually meant to be run not just in Node.js, but maybe in other runtimes as well. For example, on Cloudflare, if you want your application to run in Cloudflare workers, right? locally, you want it to run in Miniflare, essentially. So you want to run in an environment, even locally, you want to run it to the same environment that's close to your production environment, right? So previously, I think some frameworks that can build to run in Cloudflare Workers, but the local development is actually running in Node.js. And that creates a discrepancy between the local dev environment and the production environment. So you would be accidentally using things that exist in Node.js, but not in Cloudflare Workers. And similarly, there might be other WinterCG compliant runtimes, or maybe you want to run an environment in Dino or in Bun. So we actually looked at it and realized, okay, your same source code in a sort of full stack framework or a meta framework, right? It actually needs to be transformed and run in different environments. And previously, the browser Node.js combination was just one specific case for it. They are just actually just different environments there. So we tried to abstract this into something that's more generic called environment API, where now you have a browser environment, right? So it's specifically saying this, like for this environment, I want my code to transform, knowing that's going to run in the browser. And it also should output a format that's suitable to run in the browser. And for another environment, it might be running in Node.js, and that the purpose is SSR, but the environment, target environment is Node.js. And another case could be the target environment is a worker, but the purpose is also SSR, right? Environment API essentially allows you to more correctly describe this kind of architecture. It also allows you to have multiple environments, more than just browser and Node.js. So this unlocks a lot of interesting possibilities. And it also, because this is a pretty significant change, it's been going through some very long discussions. We've had early drafts, RFCs, and we've shifted it as an experimental feature so that we can get feedback from the framework authors. The Cloudflare folks and the Remix team are both very excited about it. So we're getting a lot of good feedback from there. Some of it also drives the needs that we have in Vitess, because Vitess also leverages the same API to run your modules. Part of the environment API work, backporting some of the things we did in Vitess. In Vitess, it had a sub-package called vitnode, which essentially took what... I think it's interesting because vitnode is sort of a fork of what Vit did previously on SSR load modules, made more generic. Later on, Vladimir, who worked on Vitess, suggested that by backporting the vitnode logic back into Vit, we can make the SSR logic more generic, which eventually ended up being environment API.
This speaks to something you mentioned earlier about having composable parts forming a more cohesive whole. You've taken that same concept here to environments, that instead of hard coding or making specific stuff, you've taken the general idea of an environment and baked it into the underlying builder. And
yeah,
framework.
I think in a lot of ways, we do want to make all the tools we build, first, composable, and second, we want to avoid them being too tightly coupled to a specific solution or runtime, just assuming something is the default and kind of force bake into it, or at least we should provide escape hatches or abstractions that allow users to opt into other things.
And one of those users is Vitest. So same question for Vitest. What are the big next steps you're excited about? Is the environment API integration
this
one of
them? This is probably going to happen later when we actually stabilize the environment API. But one recent big feature that the team's been focusing on is browser mode. So Vitest browser mode was... The Vitest team was able to quickly develop browser mode, mostly because Vitest is based on Vite, right? So when you want to, say, run the test actually in the browser, you can just start a Vite dev server and load those modules and make them run in the browser. I think previously, one complaint that users had about unit testing front-end code is when it comes to DOM APIs, you have to simulate it with JS DOM or other DOM simulating the DOM in the Node.js. Some users have really strong opinions around this because JS DOM is not a real browser, right? It tries its best to stick to standards, but still, it's not a real browser. I think having a browser mode that allows you to have your front-end browser components tests that actually run in the browser is really beneficial. But at the same time, personally, I still use Vitest with JS DOM in a lot of cases, because it really depends on how much fidelity you want when it comes to being as close to the real environment as possible. A lot of the DOM-related logic we're asserting are framework level. And during the development, we want quick iteration for local unit tests. And then we run the end-to-end tests before the publish in a wider browser matrix to ensure compatibility.
Do you think that long-term, because you have such a flexible way to navigate environments, you might build a product equivalent to a Playwright or Cypress, like one level higher to address that level of testing?
I think there is going to be a certain level of overlap, but I think Vtest is still mostly focused as a unit testing tool, so there's a lot less of the sort of browser automation aspects to it, which I think tools like Playwright and Puppeteer really provides the most value as a project. I think there can be interesting overlaps here. For some users, maybe just using the browser mode of Vtest is good enough for the testing use cases. And I think that's nice, right? But definitely Playwright and provides a more comprehensive set of tools when it comes to, for example, simulating user interactions for end-to-end testing purposes.
That's a different level of abstraction, a different level of user interaction than what Vtest typically deals with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's move on to the final piece of the four-part puzzle, OXC. Are there any particular upcoming features or big releases you're excited for?
I want to quickly go through the parts that we've already completed for OXC, right? Because it's a pretty big roadmap. So OXC started as a parser. It comes with a linter that's already working. The linter was initially created as a way to verify and test the robustness of the parser itself. Borshin has been working on it for a very long time, quite a long time before he even joined VoiceZero. The linter is ESLint compatible and can also support ESLint 8 config files now. So it has several hundred rules that support it from all the major ESLint rules and major ESLint plugins, including ESLint plugin import. That's much more performant than ESLint plugin import because OXC also implements its own resolver in Rust. Overall, I think the linter is probably one of the pieces of OXC that's right now mostly directly usable as a standalone piece if you're interested in just experiencing the speed of Rust-based JavaScript tooling. There's a certain level of overlap between Biome in this. In terms of link, the design goals are slightly different as Biome is a bit more opinionated in terms of its linked rule set, whereas OX linked right now is just more focused on a faithful port of ESLint rules at this moment. So outside of the linter, there's also the transformer. The transformer is the part that we're focusing on right now and trying to push across the finish line. There are several major transform TypeScript that's already done, JSX that's already done, isolated declarations that allows us to emit DTS without going through TypeScript itself is done. So these are already usable via the OXC transform NPM package and also via as individual crates. And the part that we're trying to finish right now is the target layering transforms, all the syntax layering transforms, essentially down leveling your ES2024 code all the way down to ES2050. It does involve quite a bit of work because there are like things like async generators and decorators, which are probably some of the hardest transforms, but we're pushing to have this done before end of the year. So the transformer should hit completion status in the next 2 months. And after that, there's the minifier. The minifier is already in prototype status. It already works. It's already in rollout. It's just we haven't really completed all the more advanced minific things. But the minifier itself is architected to be multipass. Essentially, you can, like Clojure compiler, you can customize and pick a trade-off between performance and the level of compression you want. And there's also an experimental project from a community member that's building a more advanced, he calls it a tree shaker, but I think it's more like an advanced code optimizer that is able to do a lot of constant evaluation ahead of time compilation to achieve even more extreme level of optimizations that we will likely look and integrate into OXC's minifier in the future. So the transformer and the minifier are probably the two biggest chunk of work that's going to be pushed next. And finally, there's going to be the formatter. a pretty compatible formatter. We leave it to the last, mostly because Biome is already doing a pretty good job, but we're just going to do it for completion's sake once we finish the other more important part.
I actually want to take a step back and ask about the linter. Mm-hmm. So as you may know, I work on TypeScript ESLint, which is typed linting. For those who can't see us, we're both grinning right now. Typed lint rules are quite a big feature that are currently available in ESLint, and there's no type system that's currently available, to my knowledge, in Rustland. How do you work with that, the two different areas at
speed? So I think OXLint right now is strictly focused on linting that can be done via pure syntax analysis, right? I've read your blog post on the state of type-aware linting, and I agree with most of the points, right? I think trying to simulate a subset of the types in the tool itself is a dead end, and you're always at the risk of drifting out of sync with official TypeScript. And there's also a very limited set of things you can actually do by just doing static syntax analysis. Or at one point, you end up building TypeScript yourself in another language, right? So I think a lot of this is type-aware linting. You cannot get around TypeScript itself. So the performance bottleneck will come from TSC, right? I think there are two ways of looking at this. One way is to plug TSC into the linter so that you have to run TSC to get the type information during the linting process. But then in that case, you're only leveraging TSC for the linked rules that you care about. And in a way, I always felt that type-aware linked rules is a kind of a blurry line or a gray area where is it really linting or is it type checking? For example, TypeScript implements certain features that, for example, it warns on unused imports, which is technically a linting concern, right? But TypeScript does it anyway. So I think there's like some blurry lines here. Like some of it falls into the type checking category where maybe, you know, it is to some extent, I think that type-aware linked rules should be somewhat considered type checking and should be just done as part of the type checking pass. And in that sense, I've mentioned this multiple times, but Johnson has a project, Johnson who works on Volar for Vue, but he also has a project called TSS Linked that essentially provides an interface for you to author linked rules, and it's converted into a TypeScript plugin that runs as part of the type checking pass. This way you leverage as much as possible during the type checking phase, and only do the necessary linting with the information you care about. I think that's a promising direction, but it's also, you can't really make it any faster if TypeScript itself doesn't get faster. I think at one point, Microsoft is the only company that has the capability to make TypeScript significantly faster by maybe porting it to a native language. And I think I'm pretty optimistic that's going to happen. I think Microsoft has the incentive to do it. So we'll see.
At this point, it's one of the few remaining things that people constantly gripe about for good reason with TypeScript. They've gotten isolated declarations, project references, all sorts of other great features. And most users are pretty satisfied with the type system. In fact, many users are annoyed at how big the type system feature set has become. But yeah, a faster TypeScript would be lovely.
I think that's, unfortunately, that's also one thing that VoiceZero probably won't really be committing to, because the level of resource you need to really re-implement TypeScript using a faster language and also keep behavior consistency with the current JavaScript TS-based implementation, I don't think it's practical for a third party to do it.
I would love to talk more about this, but we're running up on time. Evan, is there anything else you'd like to talk about or bring up while we have you?
I guess if you've listened up to this point, I assume you're pretty interested in JavaScript tooling in general. So do check out our projects. If you're interested in building on top of them, join us on Discord. We're pretty active. And also try them out. Give us feedback. A lot of this stuff is pretty new, but we're trying our best to make them as battle-tested as possible. And stay tuned for future news. I think early next year, a lot of this will be a lot more ready than they are now. I think both OXE Transforms and Rodan are in this like sort of, we've done 80% of the work, but the, you know, the rest 20% is just taking a lot longer. That's typical in the development lifecycle, but we're currently trying to push through that stage.
That's really exciting. Evan, I'm honestly really pumped about all the stuff you're doing. I think you have a great perspective on the ecosystem and its tooling. And it's going to be awesome to have a unified approach like Void Zero's projects coming out and being really integrated.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Yeah, one thing I want to add is when I decided to work on Void Zero and all this, right? Like, one thing we do want to avoid is coming off as being super arrogant and say all the current tools sucks and we're going to make things 100x better. Like, we definitely want to make things better. But I think I've always looked at the evolution of the JavaScript ecosystem as something that's inevitable, because a lot of people look at the JavaScript ecosystem and just joke about it or laugh at it and think it's in a chaotic situation and it's irredeemable to some extent. But I think as someone who pretty much my career grew up with the JavaScript ecosystem, right? I've been part of it for a decade. I really enjoyed this whole process of everyone just like in the Wild West and figuring things out and being able to just a random person can come up with a project and it gets adoption and gets widely adopted. And I think this stage of the language lifecycle is not really a bad thing to have. I think as long as eventually we can learn from all the things we've done and come up with something better. And I think a lot of the things we're building right now is built on top of all the knowledge we've accumulated collectively over the years as a community. And I want to, like, as we're building these newer and shinier tools, I still want to acknowledge all the great things that's happened in the ecosystem, because it wouldn't be possible to build better tools without these prior arts.
I strongly agree. I think that's a beautiful and correct and wise note to end the interview on. Evan, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it and really looking forward to all the great stuff Void Zero is going to be doing. Cheers.